Don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a UnitedHealthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.
This is Jordan Grace, and you're listening to the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
BWB, this is One Nation Radio. You better get it right. Rich Latta, James Boyd came to give them life. The Blackest Wrestling Podcast has come to kick all ass and drop it 6 feet if they're kicking trash. Word, let me welcome y'all to something different. And if you dig it, man, you should let some friends listen. We be getting it in this on the regular, dude. Ravishing flow, but this shit rule. See, James don't rap, so I had to break it down. The whole network, man, we coming for the crown. Raps in the columns, I keep them both covered. Making the beats too, so the listeners can bump it. Hit us with the rating, yeah, I'm saying it's a 5. Before you hit it, talk, bob your head side to side. It's One Nation Radio, and this is the beginning. It's Rich, and I'm here with James. It's time to listen to One Nation.
We got the power of the pyramid.
This is Mike Sempervivi from WrestlingObserver.com. Check me out on Wrestling Observer Live every day. And also check out your boys, Rich and James, on One Nation Radio.
This is Kenny Omega. We're listening to One Nation Radio. Check it out, guys. These guys know what's up. Big Kenny Omega fans. That's all that counts to me. Goodbye and good night. Bang.
Hey, folks. Welcome to this week's edition of One Nation Radio. I'm James Boyd. You hear me. I have Rich Latta. What's going on, man?
We were wrong.
We were wrong. You got to tell me what we were wrong about. I mean, obviously, it's a show. We talk about pro wrestling. We'd be wrong a lot, but what were we wrong about in particular?
Yeah, I thought old Will was going to win, but I guess not.
I mean, I thought Will was going to win. I thought Will was going to win because I thought that, like, you got in my head about, like, Moxley is... You know, Moxley gonna hold on to his belt till he gets to Darby. So I was like, all right, well, that's the case. You keep if you want to keep nonsense people from being furious with you, you get away from you don't put Hangman into that situation and have people furious with you. Now that they've done it, Hangman better damn well win, because if not, it's gonna be people jumping off point with his promotion.
Look, I had always heard about both Swerve and Hangman getting title challenges this year. The Swerve one did not change dates, locations, anything. I don't know if the Hangman one changed or not. So I don't know if we're all the way out the woods here. We better be. I don't know.
No. I get what you're saying. You're saying based on what you know, you don't know whether or not something's changed. My point is, it better have been changed.
Right.
Hangman
That's
Adam Page used to walk into All In Texas, and the Cowboy needs to leave with the fucking championship. After what him and Ospreay did over the past couple weeks to build this program up, main event over Anarchy in the Arena, put on one of the greatest matches in the history of the sport, the fake sport, it's over. We're done here. Jon Moxley has had a reign of terror of bad matches. And whether it's been he's been bad on purpose or whatever, I don't care. No one cares. It's been bad. It's over. Move on. The only person that's even got a great match out of him in the defense, I mean, has been Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy is nowhere to be found with an injury. Unfortunately, get well soon. My point is this. No, we're done. The reign of terror ends here. I don't give a fuck about Darby Allin coming off the mountain. Good for him. Glad he didn't die. Get back soon. We're done. We're done here. The heir apparent isn't going to be Darby Allin. Darby Allin's been off TV forever. For how long? How long have you been off TV for?
December.
What tickets does he help sell?
Not a damn one.
Not a damn one in 2025.
Yeah.
If you want to make him champion, make him champion at a later time, but not a later time, meaning he has to hold this reign that Jon Moxley's on has to continue. We're done with this.
And it seems like, and like, I don't know, I guess we'll jump into Will and Hangman here too. We'll just start with it. But with Will, like, you know how my brain works. I'm like, all right, was this beat Ospreay now so he doesn't actually have to take a loss of Moxley because he's playing for whatever later, you know?
Well, that's the whole point of all of these losses, that all these big monumental losses for Ospreay, is that like he's going to get them back at one point.
It's like, he's being shielded here.
He's setting himself up for an all time title reign with defenses against people that he's going to get L's back from. Like, this is like, there is an Omega match, there is a Swerve match, there is a Page match now. There is a, I mean, obviously, you know, if he had lost to Moxie, with a Moxie match. There is an Okada match. There's all these matches he has. So,
Yeah, so like Will Ospreay versus Hangman Page, one of the great matches of all time. By the time this thing got in the ring, James, this show was long as hell, but like it didn't matter. Everybody knew what they were ready for. They were into it. This was one of the rare times like in AEW where it was like, yo, they nailed the presentation 100%. Whatever the fuck they did with the lighting was incredible. The way they shot this match, this felt like a prime G1 final. Like, you just don't know which guy's gonna win. It was just like, I thought the work was so high quality in this match. I thought they literally showed like by the time it got in the ring, this had felt like the biggest match in this promotion
in a long time.
Since All In, like last year.
Rich, that's where lighting's from. It's all in lighting. It's All In / Grand Slam lighting.
Yeah, I don't know what they did, but it was like,
there's white spotlights up in the air.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, you know, usually like when they do the introductions, you see that kind of lighting, but they just left it. It felt like.
Yeah.
And it really added to the ambiance of everything. And it was like, man, it feels like some of the best wrestlers just putting on the peak of what pro wrestling could be. Not just in 2025, but of all time. And it really, I really appreciated the match just from a sense of like, this is so great. And like, we're going to get a clean winner. There's no bullshit. There's like just guys fucking going for it. And, I love this match. It like, I think it's going to get at least 6. I don't know, you know, Dave might be heartbroken that Will lost, but I don't know, man. Like, I think that, like, I don't know, like I said, I don't know if anything changed or anything, right? Uh-huh. But I was fine with whoever won, right?
Same.
I thought Will was going to win. Thought it is not wise to just keep beating him all the time. But the guy's so fucking great, it's not going to matter. Here's your suffering. Here's your whatever. He's lost the C2 final. He's mm-hmm. lost the Owen Hart final. He's lost a Swerve before.
He's lost the G1 too.
He's lost plenty of G1s. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, you know, this guy, I saw a connection last night, James. I don't know about you. Yeah. Like this guy's incredible. And Hangman really just like, it was so cold how Hangman approached this match, while how Will was like kind of playing to the crowd and doing everything. They kept pointing out on commentary, Hangman is laser focused on him. And then you think about the promo that set it up last week. It was like, we should have known. Like, they let Will go a little too crazy in the promos last week, because I thought he like blacked out.
And at the beginning of the match, like, it's a babyface versus babyface match, but like, Ospreay is playing to the crowd like a bad guy to get the crowd more on Hangman's side early. Like, it was, you know, like for me, when I saw that, I was like, okay, I think Hangman's winning. I just happened to be right. I mean, obviously it's a gut feeling thing. There was still room for cheering for them at different times at different points, but still I felt like at that point in time, I was like, okay, I've seen this. And the thing for me that I loved about this match is this was these two guys having their first singles match, even though they've been around each other in different promotions, whatever else. And ultimately, I'm watching this match, and like, this is like the best parts of like the Hangman Danielson series, those matches that went like an hour, And this is like, obviously, with the standoff, like this is part of the Hangman, or sorry, the Danielson and Ospreay match from last year. Like this is like a distillation of like the best stuff from both Danielson matches put together. I was like, these two, like
I always knew like this promotion was like always headed towards Will versus Hangman at a certain point.
Yeah,
had to. And it was like, it was just like, all right, how great can this be? And then they surely answered that with just Hangman doing Swerve's finish, and then Will cocking back for the V trigger.
It was first the V trigger. It was first Ospreay doing a V trigger, and then Paige got it by doing the Swerve JML big pressure spot. I was like, man, this is
That Styles Clash off the edge of the ring, that was pretty sick.
That was disgusting because I don't know why he didn't just why did he jump? The jumping made it to where.
So the crazy thing was, I thought Hangman was going to reverse that like into a dead eye or something.
Oh, he's going to get his feet free, land on the floor. I get you mean.
And then just boom, you know, like. I thought they were going to do this at some point in the match. I wouldn't be shocked if they pulled that out one day.
The Deadeye spot was saved for the table, which is like the table fucked up. But like outside of that, it's a perfect match. I thought that as you mentioned, off the apron to the floor Styles Clash, like Ospreay jumps instead of just, you know, like lean and fall, like melt off the apron, and like, you know, Paige, like he landed on his forehead, which was, that was the second time in the night where someone landed on their forehead and looked bad. Cause when, the counter that Mercedes had in the match where she escapes the hitter raid by like doing arm trap into like a small package, like Jamie landed on her forehead on the canvas. I was like, oof, that's tough. Like, yeah. Okay. But yeah, man, it was a great match. Like, it's one of the greatest matches of all time. Like, the only match I could think of that might be better than I could think of that I saw this year would be the Gabe Kidd and Omega match. Obviously, I've seen a lot less wrestling. I haven't watched much New Japan stuff. But, like, yeah, it's of that tier. I think it is better. I think it's flat out a better worked match than Kamatani and Tam. I think it's a flat out better worked match than Mayu and Shuri. Which I thought Mayu and Shuri was a better work match than Kamatani and Tam was in the ring. So yeah, man, I thought this one, you know, on the Meltzer scale, Meltzer's going to get this like at least 5.75, at least
minimum. Yeah,
yeah. And we've been set the bar at 5.5 on the Meltzer scale. Meltzer's scale of where it's going to be, it's going to go above that. Like this, I mean, I think this could very well win Voice of Wrestling Match of the Year. I think a lot more people are going to end up seeing this than even the Gabe Kidd and Omega match, unfortunately. But still, I think no way this don't finish top five unless something else crazy happens this year, which very well could, because as I mentioned, when it came to when I talked about Hangman, like Hangman is one of Moxley's best opponents. Hangman is one of Moxley's best opponents. If Moxley doesn't come out here and give us a classic, then he might, like, what are we doing?
We just leave him there in the stadium, just like, hey, walk home. Like,
I mean, he's got too much money to be walking home, but I mean, Renee will give him a ride, you know. But still, it's like, hey, there's no excuses. Like, I don't care how many rules, I don't care what your ideas are for run ins or Gabe Kidd or whatever bullshit you got. 4.5 or get the fuck on.
Yeah. So they're going to do Hangman Page versus Jon Moxley. So. Looking at Hangman's last 6 months, of course, he was in that four-way challenging and kind of just...
Yeah. World's End, right?
Was there. Yeah, was there. Kind of had a weird... I would say this. He's had a very weird journey since last All Out, and I don't know how you could possibly, like, look at this and predict it, because, like, all of it was constant zigzagging. This is... Like, you think about how how hot it was when, you know, he whooped Swerve's ass, and then what did they do? They beat him for months and months with Jay White, and sent him to do country whipping matches with Jeff Jarrett, and you know, they did the Christopher Daniels thing after, which kind of got him back on track. You kind of squash stuff with Swerve a little bit. They do a detour with him and MJF. And then they think about how all that MJF stuff was. It was like MJF and Jeff Jarrett getting all this TV time. And then Hangman just enters the tournament from there. And it's like, So I don't know. I thought it was an interesting way they actually got him to this point.
I would not credit them as saying they've had this plan all along. There's no way they had this plan all along there's no way that they thought that back in, let's say, October or before 2025 that Hangman was going to be in the main event of All In Texas. There's no way.
I don't know why you would book someone like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Like, because honestly, they didn't fix this with him until the MJF, honestly. And honestly, given where they were as far as their quality of television, it wasn't that they needed to fix Paige. They needed Paige to fix MJF.
So yeah, because Hangman was just like almost in this no man's land. I feel like where it was like
they were giving him scraps.
Oh. Right. Question from Slash Dye. So can we officially say TK has moved on from the punk stuff towards Hangman?
No. How do I say this? We'll never know whatever affinity or how much of a We'll never know how much of a mark Tony Khan was for CM Punk exactly. We'll never know the depths of that. But we do know that what was stop and start a lot with Paige, and some of that had to do with him, you know, taking family time or whatever else. But a lot of time when he was around, he was out here doing a lot of this, right? Up and down the roller coaster, not, you know, on a, you know, aside from the Swerve stuff, you know, just kind of a wandering around, right? And throughout the promotion. And the Swerve thing caught him hot again, and then like he was like, all right, I guess I don't want to go super reckless speculation. It was like the Swerve thing changed things. It wasn't like, you know, it's been the last 2 years have not been, as you just mentioned, like the last 4 months, but like it was better than him, you know, as when Swerve approached him, be like, hey, if I had your opportunity, I'd be the first black AEW world champion. Right.
Right.
Like, there was a lot of, he was just hanging out for a while, in and out, whatever else. And, you know, I think a lot of the stuff he did as far as the heel stuff was like, I guess he didn't want him to, you know, put away high quality baby faces while doing that stuff. But it was serviceable in the story of, you know, especially Daniels. I don't think they got a good enough use out of it ending badly with Dark Order, but I mean, they don't use Dark Order at all no more. So, but yeah, I wish that had more care done to it, but that's my point. There wasn't care put into it at that time. Now there is. You can tell there's a difference.
Yeah, like he's gotten some promo time where he's really blown people away of late. And I think this nigga needs to ride into the stadium on a white horse. He might actually need to put the cowboy hat on actually this time. And literally just.
He needs to win the belt.
He's not winning.
He needs to win the belt.
He's not winning.
If he's not winning, I'm going to leave that fucking stadium furious.
I think many people will, and I'm not gonna want to hear about anything with Darby Allin and
or Jon Moxley or whatever.
I'm not all the way in there.
We're watching watch the TV without knowing anything. You tell me him or Ospreay shouldn't walk out as champion after the last at this point 7 months of television between the three.
Yeah,
you tell me.
Hangman's got to beat him, and I think so much around this promotion. It's almost like when you got this this box of dynamite, and you have all these characters. Yeah, you have all these characters that have been kind of catching flame lately, right? Like we've been lighting up each individual dynamite stick, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's like all we got to do is clear up the little one that's wet right there so the rest of this shit can take off and blow up.
But the John little Moxley's one's the biggest stick. One. He's the fucking champion in the main event of most of these shows or most of these main pay-per-views.
Once that's cleared up, I think, like, you can already tell with the discourse around social media with how, you know, people are really excited about this company right now. A lot of positive momentum, especially in the light of WWE doing a lot of faltering left and right. The Don Cena thing just, like, sinking this company critically. And it's like, I don't know how they get out of this without Hangman winning, and I pray that's the plan.
Here's the thing.
Because if not, someone needs to stand up and quit.
Look, as you mentioned it, the way you put
look,
it,
there right? are people going. There are people going to bat for Hangman that are all-time great wrestlers that are going to bat for him, like saying, hey, you know what needs to be done, Tony Khan.
So
let's get to it.
So think of how you put it. They don't know how to get away with it if he's a champion. Why would you want to do that like that? Like, where you want to put, like, if you were to, there's no way to justify putting it on or keeping it on Moxley without people saying in that way. They're going into some way of finding a way not to. There's no, man, we're done here. Like, it's been 2 years. He's overcame a. He's overcame bad writing. Like, he's an actor that has a character, and the character has outdone the writing and the direction to the point now to where you have gotten notes over the seasons, and people say, this is our favorite character. We like this character the most, or whatever else, even though we put him in these stupid subplots. Now the subplots are good again. Utilize it. Don't fuck it up.
I'm interested to see what the tickets look like now, if there's any, you know, increased movement for them. I feel like they had to know something.
And also, one thing also to note, right, when people talk about the whatever tickets they have sold already, right, I don't know about Dallas, but I know about San Antonio and I know about Houston. They're late walk-ups locally. Whatever it is right now, I think it's 40 some odd days away. If you're doing the counting thing of they failed or whatever else, I will hold on to that. Because I don't know how Dallas is with walk-ups, but I know how historically how Houston and San Antonio does with walk-ups. People will come late to buy their tickets locally. Flying in is totally different. Yeah. It's a flying show, but there will be locals that will want to watch some fucking wrestling because it's Texas.
Yeah. So congratulations to Hangman for winning. Will.
Congratulations to us. Will. Congratulations to us.
Yeah. We got to watch this shit. What the fuck happens to Will Ospreay now? Like, I don't, that's what I was like, hold on. there's a lot of guys that are in the limbo situation right now.
It's not like I'm concerned that he's not going to be on the show. Okay. I don't think it's going to happen, but, we'll figure out, what comes his way. I think that, you know, there's a lot of fallout with, you know, the Anarchy in Arena slash
Could have him be the special referee for Okada Omega, you know.
Okay, like jokes, but I mean, like, obviously, you know, there's gonna be fallout and that kind of stuff from Anarchy in Arena slash whatever next matchup will be put together for what follows all the time, which is Blood and Guts. So, like, he could be tied to that. Who knows? But like, whatever he'll do, it'll be awesome because he's the best pay-per-view wrestler ever at this point. Now, nobody has that kind of track record in batting average at this point. It's him.
Yeah.
Is there anybody even close at this point?
Bro, he just has so many. Like, it's like however many great matches you think someone else has is like you can name. Like Ospreay has like 25 more of them.
Here's my question. No. Here's a better one. What is his worst AEW pay-per-view match? What is it? Anybody in the chat want to tell me what his worst AEW pay-per-view match has been?
Probably the Roderick Strong match or the Kevin Knight match. And that was probably like 4.5, both of those.
That's where I'm getting at. Yeah. Like, We've talked about this before with him and his future. If he could stay healthy, is the knees, the neck, the hips, the back stay healthy or stay, you know, relatively healthy, where he can end up. I think he's going to be doing, I think over the next 18 months, I'm going to say some shit with my whole chest, and it's going to be clipped up or whatever else people are holding me, because they don't like his kind of wrestling. I don't give a fuck. He is one of all time greats already. And, I think it's beyond at this point. I hold on to it, but he's on track to be the greatest pro wrestler of all time. He's on track. We'll see.
He's great, man.
After watching that match, I was like, is he actually in fact the greatest wrestler we've ever seen? I don't know. I think it's reasonable to ask that. Obviously, there's everybody is out there in history of pro wrestling. There's a lot of talented all time great wrestlers. This motherfucker wrestles at a level, with a consistency, at a frequency that on TV anyway, right? You know,
and it all just keeps getting better. It feels like it keeps getting better.
I don't know if it's necessarily better, but the thing is, it starts holding more weight emotionally. It's holding more weight emotionally with the people he's wrestling and been tied to, and it's because of the promo work. Like, when I mean the greatest wrestler ever, I ain't talking about just, obviously, I started with the pro wrestling in the ring, and ring performer is already,
well, you know what it is.
As far as, like, the promos, the storylines, everything. I mentioned that before he even got into Hangman. I was like, bro, people had the memory of a goldfish when it comes to him. Every time it's him time to cut the promo, the money promo, he cuts the money promo and it's fire. And he just went out there and had that segment with Hangman on the Go Home show. That's all time AEW segment. And it's like, all right, man, we're just gonna continue to pretend not to see what we fucking see every time he's ready for this. Every time.
Like, so, and it goes back to when, like, we were, I think when they were doing Ospreay Omega 1, and it was like, well, what's the difference between, like, Omega and Ospreay? And I think we kind of came to the conclusion, it was like, people will die for Kenny Omega. Like, mm-hmm. And, like, over time, Will is inching his way, like, closer in that direction, I feel like, he will eventually get there. Like, and it's like, once you have that, that's like the last level, I think. Like, you know, that's the top of the video game right there. Like you've already maxed out all the physical attributes. You've mm-hmm. maxed out the critical acclaim. It's like, well, these people die for you now. Like, that's all that's really left for them.
Yeah, that's the last thing. And the thing for me is, other people, they have their run at the top or their run to the rise to it or whatever else. I think it's been, I don't necessarily ease, but I think the presentation has been so strong that you almost feel like even while he loses, like, you know, he's going to have another awesome match with whoever else, maybe, you know, and then the pay-per-view in 2 months anyway. Like, so maybe that gets lost in it. I think maybe, like, there's no struggle, so people don't realize how awesome he actually has been, right? Like, there was a struggle with Kenny Omega, like, failing at the beginning of AEW into the tag team with Hangman into, you know, deciding to take an easy way out against Moxley and become the champion. There was a struggle with Hangman failing and his character not being able to deal with failure and like it end up, you know, blowing up some of his friendships along the way to get to him becoming the AEW world champion. There was a struggle in Swerve coming out of getting, you know, released from NXT to coming in to being in the tag team with Keith Lee to getting to where he got after the stuff with Paige, right? You recognize that while watching it or knowing these people's careers or whatever else. Danielson, underdog eight, or Daniel Bryan, underdog, small wrestler in the muscle factory of this man's WWE, Rise to Toxie's best wrestler, right? There is a struggle and appreciation of you overcoming the struggle, right? Like obviously, as you mentioned, Ospreay's had these big losses and it's a part of his story, but watching it, you recognize, we know he's the best wrestler. We know he's the best wrestler. We know that he came in for a big price tag. We know his time is due, right? We see all the other wrestlers came in the same time as he did and make a big money in how they were presented on the show, Mercedes and Okada on the show. And he's in the main event, right? We understand that, like, eventually it will be, the world will be his. So, like, I think maybe the cave or the backstage stuff or the presentations of it makes it feel like it's not a struggle. But, like, I think even with that, if you just put that to the side and just watch what you're watching on screen, you recognize, like, the dude's already doing special stuff. Like, and then you throw in the Fletcher stuff that, you know, doesn't get mentioned with the stuff with Callis. Like, he's been doing great stuff for a long time, or since day one in his company, honestly. Because when he came in, before he even signed to AEW, the stuff he was doing with the trios with the United Kingdom was great with, like, versus Omega and the Young Bucks. So yeah, man, it's all set up. And I think maybe people just find that to just be easy, but it's like, yeah, sometimes the easy answer is the best answer.
Let's move on to the Owen Hart women's final. We're gonna go, like, you know, bottom to top now. So yeah. Mercedes Moné defeats Jamie Hayter, and when I look at it, I'm just like, man, every one of these big Mercedes matches is
always works.
It gets real funny when you start thinking about, yeah, this is packed up. Any match she's ever had with fill in the blank, like, and then it's like people are not going to know how to deal with that and feel about it, I imagine. But they're going to have to learn to live with it today. I thought this was, like, it's just so creative.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, they nailed the stakes. They nailed the feel around it. And it just felt like both of them were just ready to, like, just express their version of how they want to do pro wrestling, like, and just ran into a perfect opponent for each of their styles.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about perfect, but they worked together really well. And they worked together probably better than I thought they would have. Because when I think of Jamie at her best, I think of her as a horse wrestler that's good, is really awesome at running and hitting. Like, I think, like, if I come up with, like, a Joshi comparison, for her, like, I've loved to have seen her, like, have a full on high profile match with singles match with her and Himeka, like, after Himeka, like, 2022-2023 Himeka, when she had finally figured completely out as a singles wrestler. Like, they just kind of have this thing where, like, they're good at just clubbing the shit out of people and being athletic and moving, and the wrestling is there, but, like, you're there just being like, I can't believe somebody that's built like this has kind of gas tank. It's kind of impressive. And her versus Mercedes was, like, she's working underneath against it, obviously because of the size difference in the back thing, the long-form story of Jamie being out for so long with her back. And, you know, it's funny because, like, this is, like, the first real match she's had to, like, really showcase her being awesome, really, except for, like, the match with Jamie. I'm sorry, but Statlander, where it's like, yeah, there's somebody that she could wrestle with that's of her caliber that she could have this kind of match with, and she's not, like, really just side questing for almost a full year. And it was, like, it's almost like a reintroduction of her into the larger division talks of, like, at the top end, right? Like, she never got her title shot, you know. It's been her title rematch or whatever else. And I'm not necessarily dying to see it. Like, I would love to see her and Toni Storm at this iteration of Toni Storm versus each other for the belt. But, like, time has passed. They were doing other stuff with Toni. Toni was trying to learn with this character. I don't know if that would have been the best for Jamie Hayter. But I always felt like, you know, they could have did it. But we didn't get it. So it's fine. But, yeah, I thought this match was awesome. And I thought that, like, just the way that she was able to fight underneath against Mercedes, and also something I've noticed with Mercedes, and I didn't notice until the show, because she's up against Jamie, and Jamie's obviously, you know, just a bigger athlete. Like, Mercedes has put on muscle mass. Like, she's bulked up. And, like, I didn't really think about it until I saw it in this match. And then I started thinking about, like, when she was wrestling other people of late, like, who was she wrestling of late? Like, a smaller woman. I think, like, Julia Hart at some point she wrestled, maybe. or I can't remember, but like she was doing like power moves that was like not really in her repertoire.
Yeah,
in the past, like this mostly this year, and I was like, huh, okay. I was like, I don't know if she has the strength for that, but it's like now you can see in her, like, yeah, she's it's strange given her age, like she's feeling out now. But yeah, like it's but yeah, like I just appreciate, like when she did the when she actually hit the or got her up for when he did reversal of the tombstone, I was like, yeah, I don't think, you know, 2016 Mercedes, or sorry, Sasha Banks wouldn't be able to pull it off on Jamie. So yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like wrestlers adapt, people grow up, people change, and all that kind of stuff. People's games change over time. And like the one thing I like about Mercedes is, you know, I say this often, you AEW, the in-house ring style. Like, I like the part where like these matches have variety. Like the Hangman Adam Page in Will Ospreay match, in the Mercedes Moné and Jamie Hayter match are not like a typical house style of what AEW does. It's not a Sugar Rush match. These were matches that were built out and given space to breathe. And this was like a lot in like the big match Mercedes fashion historically. And like, that's why I like when she gets these, you know, gets her time to do her thing on these shows. Cause every single time it goes off, every time it goes off. And you're always wondering, like, you know, is it going to be, I think it's maybe because, you know, it's a lot of Charlie Brown and Lucy with the football in WWE with her, where it's like, she could always do this, but like, there were always these parameters of having fuck shit in matches, or she had to lose. Yeah. She couldn't be the champion for long. So we weren't able to experience this for a full time. And now we have this for a full time. And it's like, all these matches go off every single time. You're getting 4 stars every single time guaranteed with her. That's the floor with her in a big match. That's the floor.
Looking at it, the Owen Hart tournament this year from the men's and women's side, just America defeats the UK again. You know, the UK just losers, you know, between Jamie Hayter and Will Ospreay. Like, we couldn't have seen them together with some beans on toast together trying to, you know, cheer each other up backstage or something like that. Like, I don't, you know. But Mercedes, going forward, is facing Toni Storm now.
Yeah.
It is not title for title. This says just for the AEW Women's Championship.
Nor should it be. Hey, congratulations on winning the congratulations on winning our version of the G1 / the Royal Rumble. So because you won that, you go to the big show and you have to put your title up. That makes no sense. There's no need for a title for title. There's no need for it.
So that makes me wonder. It's like, all right, like, you know, is Mercedes going to lose here? Is she going to win here? You know, like, I think it's pretty up in the air. So, but
who knows?
You know, yeah. So, like, it's the biggest match in the history of the women's in this company for sure.
Absolutely.
And it's like Mercedes versus the generation of women that was supposed to succeed her,
yes,
but never quite. It's almost like,
not
all right,
in WWE,
you know,
happened here.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, you know, she got one of them with Bianca. Didn't really get, you know, EO.
Didn't get Rhea.
Had a huge, yeah, stuff like that. But Toni Storm's amongst, I always look at Toni Storm and Rhea Ripley as parallels. Mm-hmm. One day.
Shut up. Move on. I know you finna say it. No, don't say it.
There's a lot of wild stories.
Move on. Move on. Move on. Move on, brother. Move on. Move on.
But no, there was no way in hell I was actually gonna say it.
In my head, I thought about it, and then once you paused, I was like, "God damn it!" Okay, move on, man. The people will ask us what the hell we're talking about.
Nope. And I can't tell you.
We'll never tell you. Don't bother asking. If you ask us, we might insult you. I'm sorry that you listen to our show and we dropped that on you, and now you're wondering. Sorry, can't do it. No.
Mercedes versus Toni is very interesting. I think the promos are going to be interesting because I think Jamie Hayter did.
Too wacky.
There's Toni Storm. It's like, all right, who's gonna be the person that gets serious here? It's got to be Mercedes, you would think.
Did I hear?
Well, I mean, I'm not gonna.
Did I hear the video
package? I'm not going to act like Tony couldn't.
Yeah, yeah. She can be serious when she wants to be, right? Like the Mercedes, yeah. Like the promo, the backstage thing with Renee. That's the thing. They need to do the Renee thing. Like have Renee have the sit-down interview with them in the back and have Toni Storm tap into what she tapped in with, or obviously not that emotional, but like tap into being very cutting in a way that she was very cutting to Mariah. Like that will sell the match, or that can sell the match. I will say, as you mentioned that, I don't disagree with you, because while I enjoy her being a fucking lunatic, in the video package for the match last night with Mina, I believe Toni Storm referred to Mina as her what do you call it? Her buxom buttercup. That fucking killed me. Just ridiculous, man. Just ridiculous. And then we'll get into the post match for that. But I was like, man, Toni Storm at this point, she can pretty much do whatever she wants. Pretty much everything she tries works at this point. But but yeah, man. Well, so we'll see what they got to do. But like, yeah, I think it's the right thing. It's the biggest match they could do. You may as well do it here. You know what I would like to see? I would like to see them do like this is an old WWE thing where you get like two of the biggest wrestlers or whatever else. You have the other wrestlers in the locker room kind of pick, like predict or talk about those two in a way. Like I'm pretty sure they did it with Cena and Orton at some point, right? Or Lesnar and Cena. I would like for them to interview like different wrestlers backstage about like the two legendary wrestlers from the AEW Women's Division, the two most legendary ones, get together for the biggest match in Women's Division, and I would like to interview Britt Baker.
That's funny. She's not exactly around.
What do you can send her the tape? Ain't nothing. Look, she ain't got no webcam.
Well, turn your phone on.
Yeah, that's
the video true. In.
Good point. Good point. Turn the phone on. You know, send it in. Tony is like,
send a video.
Britt, can you send us a 30-second video of your commentary on who you think is going to win the Toni Storm Mercedes match? Thank you.
Sick, like man, nasty agenda. Tag team match.
You don't think that. At one point, the biggest star in the division, talking about the two biggest stars they've ever had, you don't think that would help sell the match? No,
I think you opened up the potential for a lot of nastiness. I don't think you want her associated with this at all. Honestly,
what nastiness? It's A, you are one of the greatest winners in this division. I want you to talk about the two greatest winners in this division now.
I don't think that. Look. We have already seen Britt Baker in her propensity to potentially say something explosive on a mic.
But it's a video. If she says something crazy, don't use it. And no one ever noticed she was being unprofessional or throwing shade, right? Where's the losing this?
Oh, I mean, you know, that woman can say anything.
She can cooperate, or she can be off TV forever.
Look, that decision may have already been made. So FTR versus Daniel Garcia and Nigel McGuinness. James, this match went 2 minutes longer than Mercedes Moné versus Jamie Hayter. This was the longest second match on a card I've ever seen in my life. I kept routinely looking at my watch. I was like, why is this happening? Why is this continuing? And James, they don't even beat Nigel McGuinness at the end. They do a fucking referee's decision of while he's in, I think, the sharpshooter or something, where Garcia passes out. I was like, huh? Like, I was like, all right, man. Like, I know y'all wanted to do Nigel McGuinness and Daniel Garcia. Like, I don't think this helped Daniel Garcia at all. The Stokely thing is still goofy. Look, this thing is so goofy to me with FTR.
What was the last thing that helped out Daniel Garcia?
It was not the feud with Adam Cole. Yeah, man. I don't know, man. Like, it's wild. But I just kept thinking, why is this match going so long? I'm going to tell you all the matches that this was longer than. Mercedes Moné versus Jamie Hayter. Ricochet versus Mark Briscoe. The World Tag Team Title match. Kazuchika Okada's match. Tony Storm's match. The six man at the end. Why in the hell are we letting FTR basically have like an entire collision main event second on the show? I don't understand.
I don't know. But what I will say is that when I turned on this pay-per-view at like 7 p.m., like I got through the Mercedes and Jamie match and I was like, all right, I'm going to have to pick and choose what I watch and I'm only going to watch what I find essential. And when I saw that match, I was like, oh, thank you. And then I kept scrolling through, fast scrubbing through, and I was like, oh, it's still going. Oh, it's still going. It's still going. I was like, oh, I just killed off like damn near 35 minutes. Awesome. I'll get back and watch it when I get to it. That's not to speak on the quality of the match. I didn't see it. But I was like, oh, I'm in a crunch. I want to watch as much show I can. So I'm going to try to kill off the matches I find unessential. And I was like, oh. And so I watched this and I was like, wait a second. This is a 4.5-hour show. When I saw that, I was like, oh, no. So that's what made me, you know, when I turned it on, I was like, I'm going to have to make some executive decisions. And like, luckily, I made a good choice. That was the longest match. We'll see whatever I'm giving your opinion. Like, I'll go back and watch it. But, yeah.
It wasn't bad or anything, but it was just like, it wasn't that great to go that long either. It was like, all right, man, wrap this up in 16 minutes, if that.
Gotcha.
Like, what are we doing here?
And does Dan Garcia feel like a, like, he's a singles wrestler to me? Like, how do you think he fared in the tag?
They were fine. It was fine, but it was like, it didn't move me. Like,
okay.
but one thing that definitely did, the stretcher match between Ricochet and Mark Briscoe, and yo, Ricochet,
it's fucking hilarious,
bro. He better send Swerve a Christmas card this year, like, flat out. After that whole, you know, thing with, you know, everything he got going with him, mm-hmm. and how he's kept it rolling. This guy's the best heel in like wrestling. Like who's doing it like this guy right now, bro?
I mean, Sayaka Tani, but yeah, I get you mean.
Bro, like, this is like,
he's
all
fucking
right.
Hilarious, bro.
He's hilarious. He's dangerous. He'll fucking wear it.
That's the reason why it works. Still. That's the reason why it worked. He's hilarious where you can laugh at him and you can. It's the same thing with Swerve, right? Like, Swerve kept embarrassing him until at the very end he pulled up the stairs and stabbed shit out you, and then all of a sudden he's like, he turns into a movie monster, right? He turns into fucking Michael Myers with the scissors. Like it is that switch, that change where, like, you know how we always talk about how, like, the Young Bucks, like, they're very good at, like, when they're hot dogs as heels, like, they immediately get their comeuppance?
Yes. The FTR tried one of those we fuck up and hit each other spots and completely fucked it up during the match. So I was just like, oh, my God.
Okay. So, like, the reason why it's disarming, right? Like, it's the oh, you know. Oh, you're an asshole. You immediately get the payoff, right? Of the heat you suffered, right? Like, him being a goofball, that's probably not the best comparison. The better comparison is probably like a heel version of what Orange Cassidy does, right? Like, you know, you're not supposed to take him seriously, and he catches you off guard. He catches his opponent off guard, and then he gets you with the Stun Dog Millionaire and the Orange Punch, and he, next thing you know, he gets a win on you, right? Like, it's all a disarming thing. That's what he's doing as the character, like, as a bad guy. Like, you don't respect him or think he's dangerous until all of a sudden he starts stabbing the fuck out of Swerve or stabbing the fuck out of Mark Briscoe, and Mark Briscoe's out here on the fucking Muda scale bleeding... bleeding like fucking crazy, bleeding all over the floor, bleeding all over the gurney, bleeding all over the mat, like, and then he was so damn bloody that he comes out later for Anarchy in the Arena and he's still bleeding, right? Like, this match is awesome. And also, and a part of this, as I mentioned, the whole dishonor thing about him being a just, you don't respect him. It's like, early in the match, they get him, or Mark Briscoe gets him toward the ambulance, and he literally just gets free, and he fucking run.
Yes, he's a gif.
He fucking runs into the ring and dives in. That shit had me howling. And then you get to the spot. For me, I loved it. Because, like, the second I see that there are three bottles, like, there's tables, obviously, under the floor. And then I see him grab a bucket with, like, spray bottles in it. And I was like, once he pulled out that bucket, I was like, he's gonna fucking Windex his head. And then he put him in a fucking headlock, and then a side headlock, and then he literally opened the bottle, and then he fucking Windex his head in the mic.
Shine that bitch up.
Fucking died. That's the funniest. Look, man, Ricochet keeps finding new ways to get this ball shit over. It's the best gimmick in pro wrestling, in my opinion, right now. I'm sorry. I've said this to you before. I'll say it again. Ricochet ball should win right now. It should be the front runner for Wrestling Observer Newsletter best gimmick. Ricochet bald. That's it. Ricochet's bald is different. We talked about this earlier, a couple weeks ago. Ricochet's bald and everyone else is bald. I don't know if you noticed it. You saw Mark Briscoe had a mohawk right here, right?
He did. He grew that bitch out specifically for the occasion.
I'm going to differentiate myself. Y'all not finna call me bald because it's a bald versus bald match. Y'all not finna do me like that. Yeah, man, this is great. Oh. And, like, Ricochet was great. And the switch is what did it, like, the scissors coming out. And then, just like,
or that final shot where the scissors are there and the blood, and then him over the top of it,
on top of the stretcher, and he kicked the stretcher down.
Niggas say they want to see cinema. Well, that's it right there. Like,
I also like the part where, like, I thought this was fucking hilarious.
He needs it, like I pitched it to somebody. I was like, look, man, I was like, look, tell this nigga Ricochet to say that he's bald because of Onyx. Like, tell him to say he's bald because of Onyx.
That's only going to get over to, like, 5,000 people of the
don't matter.
Damn near million people that watch it.
They going to learn today. Yeah. Did you see the bald wrestler's poster? Where it was like, bald, they spelled out poster. The word bald with all the bald wrestlers in AEW. It was fan sign. Yeah, I saw it on Twitter. I'll see if I can find it.
But yeah, like, the idea that Mark Briscoe finally gets the scissors and he's going to use them, and then, like, Ricochet, like, gets knocked towards the back of the ambulance, and lo and behold, he has a pair of scissors. He found a pair of scissors on the truck, and then Mark Briscoe no sells it. He fires up and he goes to use the scissors. And then, like, he's like, nope, kicking the dick. I fucking died laughing. Ricochet is fucking hilarious, bro. Man. Ricochet is hilarious. He just is.
And Mark Briscoe, like, bro, Mark Briscoe just needs to get on any pay-per-view, and it's just like, yeah, I'm here. Like, and he just delivers, bro. Like, if you are a heel, if you're a heel,
you should want
to work with Mark Briscoe. He's absolutely.
Because he's the babyface every man's wrestler. Like, he's in a position that, like, you know, once upon a time, Eddie Kingston occupied. Obviously, Eddie Kingston has more emotional weight now and equity with the company and with the fan base. But, like, yeah, it's the same thing. Like, yeah, he comes out here and he has killer matches and he looks how he looks and we're okay with that.
Yep.
And he's fun. And he wins and losses. We don't care. We're just happy to see him. And we're happy to see him go out there and get 40 every night, every time we see him. Yeah.
A world tag team title match, the Hurt Syndicate defeat the Sons of Texas. I was watching this in the Discord, people, and I just saw people jumping for joy for this match, and I was like, why? Like, this was just like a bunch of hijinks strictly to just do MJF. Strictly to have MJF and Bobby Lashley link up. This was like, you know, standard 3-star matches. So, and it was like, this is by far the best Hurt Syndicate match. I'm like, bro,
cool.
Like, I was like, at this point, like, these people don't have good matches. So, like, when FTR both the Young Bucks, yeah, like, FTR and the Young Bucks are in this company, turned themselves heel to avoid having to do this, and then the Don Callis family is going crazy and all these tags, mm-hmm. is like, what? Like, we could be doing better things with this, but now it's like, this thing has MJF'd itself up. He's, like, globbed onto this. I don't know where it's going. Oh, it doesn't seem like it's going to culminate in a match.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't seem like it's going to culminate in a match, and none of this is, like, really, like, it's like, all right, like, we had to pull Dustin Rhodes and Sammy Guevara out of mothballs. Like, why? It, like this, like, I'm almost like, why was this on the show even?
I think the Herb has been on every pay-per-view. Yeah, I mean, they're tag team Bob Holly in this.
Coming notice.
Yeah, they come in, they beat the hell out of somebody, and it's people that, like, we don't regard, and they beat the hell out of them, right? Like, they beat the hell out of, was it 2 weeks ago, they beat the hell out of Top Flight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You could tell who the top tag teams are. You could tell they're staying far the fuck away from them.
Yeah,
they want no parts. It's for now, at least. We'll see in that change. Have that change or whatever else. But where it is right now, this is clearly just they're over. The crowd likes them. They have a huge crowd reaction. MJF doing the whole, like, dork that, you know, being this honorary Uso thing. Like, it worked. We're stuck with it.
We're stuck.
Not everything on the show is supposed to be stuff. Not everything on the show is supposed to be stuff we like. Or let me phrase that. I can live with stuff that I don't like on the show if it's something the crowd's into. To a certain point, right? Like, obviously, I got tired of the Adam Page or Adam Cole and MJF stuff too. But I can respect the part where it's like, not everything on the show is going to be something that I like. If other people like it, it's justified being there. When it's something I don't like and I don't see other people liking it, then that's when I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Like I just mentioned the beginning of the Moxley thing. Like, no one's enjoying this. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. So up next, we had the AEW Continental title match. Kazuchika Okada against Speedball Mike Bailey. And look, man, Speedball Mike Bailey was like, hey, ain't no bullshit today. You going to either wake up with these feet or it's going to be an issue. So, yeah, I thought this was awesome. Like, yep. I thought Mike Bailey was just like, he's a perfect Okada opponent, like somebody to take the athleticism to him. We've seen this playbook 1,000 times.
Yeah, to some of the greatest matches of all time. Yeah. Look, man, real simple. You gave me a great opponent. You gave me the time. It's kind of the rules. Okay. It's pretty simple. Like, you give me the time. You give me the opponent, I'll go out there and do it. Like, when you don't give me the opponent or you don't give me the time, results may vary. But, yeah, like, you know, I think it was a couple weeks ago you mentioned people are comparing him to saying that he's done worse than Nakamura. What would this be on the Nakamura cage match scale in his AEW tenure or his WWE tenure? Would it be his third best match in the company's history?
Look. I don't know what that whole Nakamura
thing was. Would be the second best match in his run in WWE. So
probably, you
know, this match is awesome.
Probably
this match is awesome, and like just high level wrestling, and Okada he is like water. My match is I have my match, and you put me in there with someone new that's highly talented. You're gonna get something great. That's how it's always been.
Bro, this thing is Speedball are so fucking good. Like,
I mean,
just seeing like they say he's a fourth degree black belt.
Yeah, I'm
just
like, window, right?
Yeah, I'm like, that nigga absolutely is. Like,
you know, when I saw the kicks and I was at the end of the match or towards the end of the match and I saw how Okada was some of them, I was like, see, I always knew Shuri would have got over in AEW, but but you know. Someone has to take them kicks. And everybody wants to take them kicks. But if someone wanted to take them kicks, Shuri would be the heart and soul of this damn company.
Big drop kick at the end. Okada reverses the Ultimate Lucha with the drop kick. That was pretty
awesome.
Cool.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, we buried Orton the other week, right? When they sold with Cena. It's like, that was your drop kick out of nowhere into the Rainmaker. It's like, it's fucking awesome. He's just great, man. He's great. And he's sleepwalking. He absolutely is sleepwalking. But do you see the two women in the crowd that had a bitch sign?
I did. I thought that was funny as fuck.
I died laughing. Did you see my another spot that I loved in this match was like,
oh, also, Bayley, yes, I do want to, Zach, bring it up, that Rick Knox, that I thought they, I don't know if that was planned. I think it was planned, but that I didn't like that. They did a full three count. No, the three count that they did in the
He fucked up. He didn't do it on purpose. He fucked up.
Like,
he was calling like a shoot, and then he didn't realize he got his hand up. That's what happened. That's what it seemed like. But yeah. because the thing is, anyone that's seen that kind of stuff knows all it does is add confusion in the crowd. Gets you know, they get on your ass if you fucked up. They want to do you fucked up chance, and it ruins the, you know, getting back into it. Like, they should have. So I don't think that was on purpose. I think that was an accident, or that was a fuck up on Rick Knox's end. And, you know, I've often said that's the reason why they put Rick Knox in these multi-man matches, multi-person tag matches, because, like, he's out to lunch all the time. He's late to everything. So he's Mr. Magoo out there as a ref. So it's like, we can always do all the, you know, guys are in there for 30 fucking seconds after a tag doing stuff. And it's like, oh, Rick Knox, you know, he lets him play. All right, sure, he lets him play. All right.
If this was a video game, it'd be like his like count is a little bit looser than that boy, the other refs.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say if it's a video game. He had, and you talk about like awareness, right? That boy awareness, yeah, in like the '50s.
Like, speedball got screwed.
Look, man, there's only so much you can get over on Aubrey Edwards and Bryce Rimsburg, right? Only so much. That damn Rick Knox, he's like, he's almost like the heel ref in Lucha. He's almost like that, where it's like, there's shenanigans, when he's in play, shenanigans are at foot. Is that intentional or otherwise? We don't know, but shenanigans are at play. You don't know what you're going to get.
How do you think people will react to a heel ref in AEW like Toronto? Like, that was just like, they brought in a new person that was like this corrupt ref, essentially, like,
Rich, we have lived in the heel gimmick era in our life in American pro wrestling. I never want to go back. I never want to see that in any promotion I watch ever again. Nick Patrick, Scott Armstrong, none of it, bro. The Hebner twins, none of it. I never want to see that shit again. Like, you imagine? Well, yeah. I ain't gonna say you imagine because it happened. Like, when they go out there with Mio Shirai on fucking police in Oz Academy. I don't want to see that shit. I hate that shit to death. Like, because it's the same thing as, like, all right, you watch.
The ref is more sympathetic.
I fucking hate that shit, bro. It's like, all right, so you mean to tell me that, like, there's a governing organization or somebody in charge of this shit and they're watching and they're letting shit happen? Shit, let's just lie. Like, it's worse. It's even more egregious than, like, somebody keeps cheating, they're retaining their titles. Like, at what point does somebody get in charge and be like, enough of the bullshit. I watch the shit just like the fans do. Cut the shit or I'm stripping you.
I love it.
Like, all these, like, you know, like, like, you know how it bothers me? Like, it's just because it's one of those things, like, the Continental Rules match. It's like, every fucking match have Continental Rules. Get the fuck away from ringside. Every single match.
Fire everyone.
This money is on the line. People are gambling on this. Like, if you were to accept that, like, you were watching a TV show that is about a sports league, right? It's like, obviously, this shit will be up and up. This would not happen in any other sports league. When you're watching boxing, you ain't got to worry about it. The ref is going to see some shit, right? Like, you're not gonna worry about
trying to get
do a run in the middle of the ring, get up on the apron, and start trying to distract the ref. That would never fucking happen. Like,
I want to see the prize picks. AEW stuff, like, you can bet on the number of counts a referee does in a match. Like, I want some bullshit to go down one night only.
Terrible. Terrible.
So, AEW Women's World Title match. Toni Storm defeats Mina Shirakawa. I think Mina Shirakawa is still introducing herself to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Even though she's been in AEW several times.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think people would consider her just off, you know, initially meeting her. They don't think she can work at the top level like that. I think this match, like, kind of went a long way. And with the music, with her likability, with her ability to speak English, with the dance, with her wrestling,
her connection with to Toni Storm aura, as well, so she can be wacky as hell and be allowed to be.
And eventually she's going to, like, get tough. Like, and eventually she's going to have, like, a death match or some match where it basically the mask drops on the pretty girl thing. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think she's going to win a championship eventually. I don't know which one.
I can see that.
But TNT probably. I think she can, you know, get strapped up eventually.
I think you know, obviously they've been teasing during Mina matches. They've been teasing, you know, a creepy crawly spider going across the screen and a graphic of it. So, like, obviously we know where that's headed with her. And I got to say, that's the best thing for her, to put her into a program. She has a TV program with somebody that is a native speaker of English. Speaks fluent English. And I forgot that technically speaks Austrian or German. I forgot they speak in Austria, but whatever. It's going to work because the Minaverse is like the Toni Stormverse. So, like, all things sapphic are going to work. All things sexual attention are going to work. And I got to tell y'all, for those who don't know, 2022, Mina Shirakawa and Tekla had lots of sexual attention. Those two wanted to hate fuck each other the whole time they were fighting over the SWA belt. It was awesome. Those two are gonna have really good matches, because they've had really good matches in the past. I think it'll do really well for both of them in AEW together.
So H&M and not the clothing store is what you're saying. I'm gonna do what they should have did on this card and talk about the six man tag next and save Anarchy Arena for after. But so the Don Callis family, Josh Alexander, Konosuke Takeshita, and Kyle Fletcher, they ended up beating the Paragon of Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, and Roger Strong. And there were so many interesting pair offs, and not one of them involved Adam Cole. I thought the Josh Alexander, Kyle O'Reilly time was incredible. I thought,
really? That don't seem like something to be up your alley. They must have been out there hitting each other hard as fuck or something, I imagine, right?
They was slamming each other the fuck around. It was like, this nigga Josh Alexander was like German suplex motherfuckers. The Fletcher and Strong shit. Takeshita was in there with Kyle O'Reilly. And it was just like, bro, it was like, all right, they saw, spoiler, the Anarchy Arena match is one of the greatest matches that have ever occurred in this promotion, right? They came out after this shit, and it was like, all right, we just gonna watch a six man. So, like, the crowd didn't really react like that, but, like, they would decide they were just gonna hit each other hard as fuck, mm-hmm. slam each other, and, like, just try to do whatever the fuck they can do in 12 minutes and whatever. And it got to a respectable level. It was like, you know, 3.5 or whatever.
Okay.
But, yeah, I thought this was as good as it could get between those two matches, essentially. But let's talk about Anarchy in the Arena. Brother, I think this is the best Anarchy in the Arena match that they've done. I think there's absolute chaos from start to finish. Three different songs. We had the Young Bucks in the Founding Father outfits. They did the Pointer Sisters thing, and then they dropped the Let the Bodies Hit the Floor. And I was like, look, man, I remember James telling me stories about, like, him playing football and them playing that Let the Bodies Hit the Floor, like, over all these, either in the weight room
or, yeah. Yeah,
all that stuff.
My,
and I was just
my,
like,
my enjoyment of metal mostly comes from like going to being in a white high school, and like when you have to lift heavy shit, they're playing guitar, loud guitar riffs. They're playing Metallica. They're playing Let the Bodies Hit the Floor. They're playing, you know, also they're playing Papa Roach, you know, Last Resort. They're playing nu metal. They're playing shit like that. Yeah.
Right. So like I was all into this. Like, and I thought this match had like an incredible layout. It basically had all the baby faces dying and then rising from the dead over and over again. And it was just like so creative with how they set the match up. I think the storylines that went into this and the matches that have happened out of it, even something as small as like, why did John Moxley have a random singles match with Kessler and Shibata? Like, everything was like looped in with the Bucks, and then coming down to Kenny and Swerve against the Bucks, like at the end, the Founding Father stuff. Year. I think is some of the
Swerve and Young Bucks stuff goes back to last year too, with the not Hand or Korean Arena, but Blood and Guts last year.
Yeah, and the Founding Fathers thing, like, is just some all time Young Buckism. Yeah. Like, come out here dressed like looking like Cody out here. So, that's what it was. That's what they were really doing.
So, Rich. I know we love the Young Bucks and everything, and like they're obviously hams, but like, you know, like founding fathers, like that's something that was left on the like cutting room floor in the pitch idea from MJF, right?
How?
Like, oh, I mean, obviously, I'm not saying if he was actually EVP of AEW and started, like, he would have done Father. He absolutely would have done that by now. He absolutely would have been like this fits. This is the most MAGA-ish like Young Bucks ever been on AEW with the Founding Father. Like, this is like it, like, oh, you want to dress like going to make America great again? You want to go back to that? You want to dress like George Washington? All right, my nigga, I get you. I see you. You're not slick. Like, MJF would have played up that part, you know.
That's
funny.
He
likes to do a lot of Trump shit, but you get my point. Like, this is a real in the hands of the wrong person. Instead of you can laugh at it, or you'd be like, they're hacks. One of the two. But the Young Bucks are clearly, they're hams. They're not hacks. They're
bro,
hams.
Them niggas are hitting the gritty wearing that shit. And I was like, people were saying these niggas watch Hamilton and shit. And I'm like, just dying laughing. Bro,
I've never watched Will Hamilton,
Nightingale. Willow Nightingale with the big black and Jack shirt on underneath to match Hobbs and shit. Bro, Hobbs in this match, it was like, bro, this is like the peak of his career, I feel like. This is like, yo, what is the maximized version of Powerhouse Hobbs? It was in this match. It was just being this big, brolic-ass baby face that you never got to put the world title on or anything, he's just fucking awesome. And the crowd fucking loves him, and he fucking hits hard, and he fucking bleeds, and he's just like saving niggas left and right. Oh, you know, my God, it was great.
You know how I know that Moxley likes the fuck out of Hobbs, or that everyone likes him?
How?
Do you see how Claudio be selling for this man? Look, man, how many times have you seen him, Claudio, hit him with a chair, and he do the whole, did I just get with a chair? You know, fucked up. Claudio ain't doing that for nobody he don't like. Claudio only puts over people he wants to put over. Well, straight up. And I don't mean no negative way about Claudio, because Claudio is a gatekeeper. He has to be at a certain level, and also he's the strongest man in the world. So I'm fine with that. But my point still remains the same. This motherfucker looks how he looks. He's as tall as he is. He's as big as he is. He's as strong as he is. And he only going for so much shit with anybody before he started going out there and started regulating people and setting people straight in the ring. We seen that nigga rough half with niggas. We seen that nigga literally pick up John Moxley and say, get your ass over the barricade. Stop playing. Right? And that's world heavyweight champion. So, or not heavyweight, but world champion. My point. Like, They all liked each other. They had a blast doing in this match. That was the part that came through in this match, right? Like, I don't think it was some perfect match, whatever.
Bro, they had the camera so much fun.
Always bad. I think this is the worst camera stuff has ever been, right? Aside from when they were in the four camera thing, like, as far as missing stuff, they had to replay something. They were missing stuff and cutting away. Like, but yeah, man, I thought it was another great Anarchy in Arena. I don't know if this is my favorite one, but like, I will say it is. I think a lot of people might like this one. I think people might like this more because this is the first time the Bayface won, I think, right?
This was so fun. I'm glad you brought that up.
the pandemic.
Jericho won one.
But
yeah.
It seemed like you were setting a schedule of like, all right, almost like it's almost like War Games, right? Where it's like, all right.
It's like the setup.
It's set up like the heels win the first one, the babyfaces win the cage match. It's what it felt like the last few years.
This was an ultimate, like, it was funny. Kenny Omega came out with the Captain America thing and the Shield. This was like some superhero link up with all the babyfaces fucking these niggas up, whooping their ass. Like, between Kenny, Swerve, Shibata, Joe, Hobbs, it was just like that picture that they took all at the end, that shit is iconic. I feel like you got to put that in the AEW museum one day or whatever.
Also, what I want to put over, Willer Yuta. Willer Yuta's fucking hilarious. They're putting spots in these matches where he is set up to fail like the biggest geek and show ass for people. Like, he's getting beat up all the time. Like, the whole part where, like, you're going to tease that Omega is going to do the moonsault off of the top of the barricade thing, and then Yuta stops him, and only for fucking Hobbs show up and then throw Yuta ass onto them people, so then Omega can go ahead and just later do the move, do the moonsault anyways. Like, you ain't stopped nothing, geek, right? Then he gets thrown in the trash by Shibata, and then Shibata throws the trash thing into the fucking garage door, and then As Swerve does, and turns it over, he rolls out of it. And then as Swerve does the segment of like black people in AEW, the hand cannon is like they're all impervious to staple guns, right? Hobbs does his, then Swerve does his, and then Swerve is like starts like just evading people and stapling all of them. He staples one of the Jacksons in the dick, and then He staples, I think, Moxley, and then all of a sudden, Yuta comes to the Danielson running bicycle, or the Kenta Kobayashi bicycle knee. Like, Swerve just literally, like, Samoa Joe, I'll move, and slides out the way, and then in midair, while he's still in the air, just clips him. I fucking die. Yeah. Like, to Yuta, like, Yuta is just the biggest geek that goes out there and dies every single week and just has these terrible high big bump guy. It is hilarious. He's such an afterthought, and like, he still gets heat because people are mad about the dang thing, but like, he realizes his role is to be comedy relief. It's fucking hilarious. Like, he's the only person in Death Riders that ever does any, that does any business for anybody as far as selling at this point, really, on a consistent basis. Like, so I kind of is like, what is Yuta even doing here? Like, he's here to actually give anybody a chance. Like, he's going to be, when they lose them titles, Trios titles, he's going to be the one to get pinned, obviously.
Nah, they already lost him shits. Remember, Moxley took the pin, yeah.
Who got pinned?
Moxley got choked out by,
because I forgot.
Joe.
I'm in the original formation when Pac was still, Yeah. They used that to set up the steel cage match. I forgot about that. You're right. But my point is, that's the geek. He's a pin. That's what it is. When they lose matches, it's because he lost. And they're going to slap him around. Like, Marie's going to slap shit out of him. And he'll be like, get your mind right. He's like, yeah, okay. And he looks terrible.
Like, Marina.
His facial hair and his hair is all wet and greasy. He looks terrible. Like, it's all intentional. It's all intentional.
Like, Marina walking up on Kenny Omega, like, she ain't checked his resume. Like, he won't, like, beat a woman down in the wrestling ring.
Well,
yeah.
I mean,
like,
look. She told him, he didn't want to do it, and then she slapped him and then spat on him, and she told him to do it, so then he did it. And it's also Willow got caught a cutter from Moxley.
Equal opportunity, you know, that was going on here.
What I will say is the way all the violence against women in these matches were set up, all the men immediately got taken out. Hmm. All of them. So I thought it was well done. Yeah. Like, it was no, Moxie is the cutter, and he immediately gets his ass wiped out. Omega does the snap dragon suplex to Marina. He immediately gets taken out. Like, that happened multiple times. And then at the end, the Young Bucks did the double super kick to Willow, right? Willow and Swerve do not the Meltzer driver, it wasn't a flip, but
the
TK driver to one of the Young Bucks. Like, it was immediately come up. It's for all the male and woman balance. So I thought it all worked well.
Yeah, like this was just so epic, and it was like the crowd kept getting higher and higher. I saw the Twitter timeline just refreshing and going crazy during this whole thing. Gabe Kidd comes out. Mark Briscoe neutralizes him, so they pay that off because mm-hmm. A couple months ago they had him, Mark Briscoe and Gabe Kidd had this awesome brawl and like promo like just in the back for no reason. I was like, well, what'd they do that for? And then you know here it is right here.
A lot of people were asking why Gabe Kidd was in this match, and it was like that's why, because they were doing this instead. They knew he was gonna come out, so that answers people's questions. Yeah. And I thought the answer was ultimately gonna be like he's gonna be inside, you know. Blood and guts, but even this is an even faster answer for those that asked.
Yeah, this was sensational.
So when do you think you get all
this is one for the record books?
So when do you think you're gonna get the Gabe Kidd is all elite graphic?
I mean, he's still under contract, so you know those deals don't
expire
until
next January.
At the minimum, yeah.
Okay, well,
at the minimum, that's gonna be. Oh yeah. Game's the game.
I'm just looking at the history.
But yeah, this was out of this world, man. Like it, you know. I just recommend on this. So, one thing I did forget to mention after the 6-man tag, the Don Callis family ends up beating down the Paragon, and then all of a sudden, Brody King's music hits, and he walks out with Tomohiro Ishii.
Yes,
and then
it's like.
And I'm like, hold on, then some other music starts playing, and it's Hiroshi Tanahashi. And I'm like, what are you doing here, Ace? And Ace walks down and catches some people.
He certainly did walk down that ramp. Look, them knees do not like going downhill.
So he comes out there, and he's whooping on Plenty Autumn folks. He's whooping on Rocky Romero. Like, they got the whole Don Callis family. So that's New Japan office politics fighting each other right there. I just want to know, are they going to be as mad at Tanahashi as they were at Gabe Kidd for showing up? So, like, you know, Tanahashi and Ishii just randomly hanging out in Arizona. You know how that is. Ishii's just chilling around the world.
Rich, wasn't Ishii in... Was he in Blood and Guts or Austin last year? Which one was he in last year?
He was in some match.
He was either Anarchy in the Arena or Blood and Guts last year. I can't remember which one it was.
Ishii just caught one of the trucks. So what's that? I don't think he was in those.
All right, Severus Rogue, get out of here. Get out of here.
No.
Look what Severus Rogue.
He was here during. Yeah, he was here during the G1 last year.
Right.
He was doing all this shit. Like, he was wrestling Swerve on TV while he was the champion and shit. It was like, come over during the G1. Yeah, he was at All In. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He was in a mixed tag with Chris and Will. Yeah, yeah, okay.
No, several Ishii just caught one of the trucks. He had him unpack the ring.
Unpack him with the ring. That's funny.
Man, getting him out of here. Boot him out of the chat for now.
But bro, I mean, overall, like, what a fucking show! Like, this is like this shit crept. I think, like, because like you look at it on paper, and it was just like, if everything comes through, it'll be awesome. Like everything else, and then it just does.
This show actually max out the on paper potential. Yeah.
Like, you know how long it's been since we've had a great main event in AEW?
All In.
All Out. Age match.
Oh, yeah. But you're right.
And after that,
you're right.
You know?
Yeah.
It feels like it's been so long. So, like, all you got to do is put some niggas as Raw on at the end. And then.
Raw that's up, they ain't on some bullshit. That's you know, got to have their mind right.
Just take the critical acclaim. You know, it's right there.
Yeah.
Like
after you watch this pay-per-view and like the TV they've done of late, right? Or really the last what, 3-4 months? Because you know, it was rough the first like month or two of 2025.
Yep.
The TV has been awesome. Pay-per-views have been awesome except for the main events. then you basically put the common denominator of the main event's not working in a posse match, and it goes off. And then you put two of the best wrestlers of the era together with a chance to get to the biggest show of the promotion's year for the title match, the main event, and they have one of the best matches ever. It's like, I think they've done as well as you can ask them to do on this road towards All In. Right as of this now, obviously they can drop it off a cliff, but like, you have your women's title match set in stone with 40 days left. You have your men's title match set in stone with 40 days left, and you got the rest to fill out whatever else now. Like, I think they've done the job. I think they've done the job so far.
Yeah.
They can fuck it up, but I think so far they've done the job.
Then, you know, Okada Omega.
So yeah, there's that's not official, but it's obviously gonna happen. Yeah.
So yeah, that was our Double or Nothing review. One more thing I want to talk about. They're requesting it in the chat, so I think they think we have some funny jokes. So Evolution got announced, and it's going to be July 13th, and it is in Atlanta, Georgia. And apparently, it is on the same day as a Beyonce concert, which is at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. What? WWE, when they come to Atlanta, uses State Farm Arena.
WWE's running a show in Atlanta the same day as Beyonce.
The women's show.
They're running the...
Yes. And I was down in that area last Thursday for the...
Don't they share Fever the same park? Don't they share the same parking lot?
It's on the same block. Like, you're driving there. It's going to be
they share the same parking lot. Their parking lots.
It's going to be a disaster.
I mean, I know it's not going to be a disaster for it. Ain't going to be no disaster for Beyonce.
I mean, she'll probably be there early, but as far as like the logistics, is going to be a nightmare. A lot of people are saying they're being set up to fail and all that. I don't think this is going to impede WWE from drawing their fans. I don't know how much crossover necessarily is going to be there.
Look, this is what I'll say, right? I believe most of you talk about the Vince McMahon thing, but like, if the show was good enough for people to want to come, they'll come. Forget the weather, forget other shows in town, blah, 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 blah. It's a little different when I mostly agree with that, but what I will say is this. You booking that show in that town against that particular act with only a certain number of months versus other time
as part of a counter programming effort.
Hold on, let me finish. You're going up. The Beyonce tickets. People have to save up to fly in and all that shit for them tickets. Save up for that amount of money I spent for them tickets. Versus you announcing this shit 50 days away. Like, you've set yourself up for failure. Like, whatever you get is whatever you get. But know that if and when this don't work, it's your fucking fault.
And it's a part of the ginormous counter-programming effort that is set to take place. The night before, they'll have Saturday's main event with Goldberg probably having his last match on it. That's why All In's going to the afternoon. And then just more bullshit. And I imagine there's a Saudi Arabia show coming soon. So they had no women's matches on their Saturday main event, I believe, this past week, if I'm not mistaken. And then there were people trying to justify it, saying, hey, they just announced Evolution or some shit. So I don't know. Don't care. Fuck the Fed. Put them in a pack. I think people are kind of overstating the Beyonce effect. Like, this is not. The only thing that would be difficult for him is the traffic.
It's the traffic and it's the city, right? Like, I think the context of the city matters, right? Like, Beyonce running MetLife in, you know, a Saturday or a pay-per-view in, like, I don't know, Barclays Center is different.
That ain't even close to the same thing, yeah. Like, but these things are right there.
They're right next to each other. and it's the population centers that you're pulling from, like, it's just different in context. Like, it's just... Like, if
you... Oh, they had a five-minute Zelina Vega belt. Oh, yeah, yeah. So Zelina Vega did that that Tama Tonga 619, essentially. Yeah, yeah. I saw that.
Yeah. It's Julia, right?
Yeah. No idea.
I saw that. It was like a three-way match. It was like a three-way match. It was Julia's somebody and Charlotte, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, that stuff sounds bad, looks bad, all the clips that I see, and it's like, well, I already saw the best of Julia, and you ain't got to worry about nothing else, so. Sorry. Oh, she broke Chelsea's nose, allegedly.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. It was the 619 nose botch where she can get her legs through. She ended up kicking through, and the kick ended up hitting Chelsea in the nose. And Chelsea, like, has wrestled with one of those, like, masks on before in the past, in her career before. So, like,
I just want some equality for Evolution 2. Is it going to be a five-match show? That's what I want to know.
It'd be funny if it was, like, a three-match show. It'd be funny. You're like,
we need to keep it nice and trim, you know. Nice and trim.
In the first Evolution, wasn't there like a battle royal at the beginning?
Yeah, there was.
Well, they might. That's how they get the four real matches, and a battle royal at the beginning, and whoever wins gets a title shot or some shit like that.
Disgusting.
Get everyone on the card, brother.
I don't know if they want to get everyone on the card no more. That don't necessarily line up with TKO.
What? There aren't bonuses anymore, are there? I thought he got rid of bonuses like since the network.
Yeah, like, you know, he's trying to, you know, trying to book 14 people for a show, you know. Keep WrestleMania in Vegas year after year. So, yeah. Yeah, look, I wasn't going anyway, so, you know, that shit don't affect me.
I mean, I wasn't going. Like, I was going. I'll try to watch, but going, I was never.
Slashdive said, disappointed I didn't get an NXT Battleground review. I'll tell you this: I saw one clip from Battleground. It was from the Sol Ruka and Kalani Jordan match. Now, I've been known to enjoy a fake looking move a time or two, right? I saw a move so fake in that match that even I was like, hold on. Like, why would this ever happen? Like,
what happened? Can you explain it?
So you know how Sol Ruka has that finisher? She does, like, the Soul Snatcher thing, right?
Yeah.
And she does, like, the flip into the rope. Usually the person's kind of near the ropes or whatever. So Kalani Jordan was, like, actually in the middle of the ring, and she was, like, laying face down and, like, trying to, like, stand up. So, what's her name? Sol Ruka is on the top rope facing away from her, right? Okay. And, like, she does an invert. Yes, she does an inverted 450 into, like, a RKO, but, like, jumps all the way across the ring. It's like, yo, you could have really just moved. It's like, it's completely like, it's like, hold on, bro. If I send you a video of this, you'll be like, all right, bro. I saw that and I was like, even for me, I was like, this is, I imagine if it made me question it, right? I imagine those motherfuckers that hate anything that those athletic people do, their brains exploded at that. But, Rick Williams is the TNA champion, apparently. So, look, man, one day there will be a conversation had about Trick Williams. That's all I'll say. Mm. Oh, look, everybody ain't going to make it. Let's just say that. But,
whenever I talk about Trick Williams, it's never about the wrestling.
Never.
It's about the intangibles. It's about the presentation. It's not about ding 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 to ding ding ding. No, it's not from bell rings to bell rings. It's before and after the bell rings. not in between.
It's tough, man. He's not as young as most people may think. So you see people that were his contemporaries.
In WWE, that might not necessarily be a bad thing. That might mean, oh, we can push him because he'll be 35 sooner.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I just hope, you know, for his sake.
They're like pushing dads.
I hope for his sake that he lights the world on fire with his TNA World Title reign. Joe Hendry been getting absolutely hoed by the WWE.
So like when is Trick Williams going to turn that bitch in?
What you mean?
Why given how WWE moves, like why would TNA ever get a win back off of somebody from that signed to WWE?
Who does he drop it to?
Yeah, just hand that bitch. Look, hell, Kenny Omega handed that bitch in, right?
Look, you know what's about to happen. Jeff Hardy will win that bitch off of him.
Oh, wow.
He'll have Jeff Hardy win that bitch.
Or Nick Nemeth.
Yeah. Or Nick Nemeth, exactly.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's probably, you got that's it. Probably the play. Yes, that's probably the play. Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny. Or they'll just vacate it and say, yeah, ladder match for the TNA championship.
Well, that's also what I mean by hanging that bitch in, like, you know, because of the injury. What's the injury?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, like, you know, they
He got blinded by a book. He out here with the fucking, remember, do you remember when Scarlett Bordeaux blinded Keith Lee? He had that fucking tape shit job. Yeah. Kurt was gonna walk with the tape job on, looking like what was it? Looking like Dusty.
You know,
looking like Dusty Rhodes at the end of Sarcane 2 with the big bandage, the big gauze around his shit. Looking like LeBron and his peak LeBron with the big headband across the eye. Yeah, one of them. Yeah.
Gotta say, man, it's like quickly they will hand the belt in at NXT to make a motherfucker not, you know, lose on the way out. They've been doing it since Oscar. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we should wrap it up.
All right, folks, thanks for listening to the show. If you are listening or watching the stream, be sure to go to... That's never happened before. I've fucking yawned. I've never done that before while doing a podcast. Or not while I'm in the talking. That's nuts. Anyway, thanks for listening, y'all. Be sure to
watch. Is he an old?
I guess so. Look, man. To be honest, I'm only working on 8 hours sleep over the last two nights. So that is a thing. But damn. No, I can hold it together. But what you say?
All their time in the commentary, they're saying.
Hey.
Comments.
It's real. It's real. But yeah, I'm going to try this again. If you are watching from the stream, be sure to go to the show notes for the podcast. You can go to the Rare Circle link there and donate. Also check out the links, the One Ish Radio, link to Chop Tees and pick up some merch there. And be sure to listen to other shows on the network. Besides One Ish Radio, you have the Trisha Sarah Wrestling Podcast, Tunnel Talk, MSW Adventure, Wrestling Hour Chris Things, Keeping It Strong Style, AEW Match Generator, and all things Elite. Thanks for listening, y'all. Later.
Caitlin Clark, get well soon.
Fight the community.